Carlene Montes-Deoca, and I'm happy to be here with Rabbi Saul Solomon. I've been a film editor in the past for many years in Hollywood. I have a lot of great stories about that. But I shifted doing something else. I'm now an acupuncturist. I'm now an author. I'm a plant-based nutritional consultant and an Amazon best-selling author of the book Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse, which is an animal lover's guide to living healthier, happier, and more extraordinary. And it's an honor to be talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, my friends. Shalom, my enemies. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am delighted to be talking about Hollywood and creativity and movies and cutting. No, not these women who cut themselves and hurt themselves and make themselves bleed. No, people who take celluloid and chop it up and make it beautiful and exciting and interesting. We're going to be talking to someone who did that for several years in Hollywood on movies like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Three Men and a Little Lady, and even, my God, Leonard Part 6. Oh, we will talk about that, ladies and gentlemen, with Carlene Montes-Deoca. She is now also a wellness coach, a nutrition person, an acupuncturist. So she's taken a whole different tack in her life. Instead of cutting, she's now poking. But we're going to be poking her, ladies and gentlemen, in a manner of speaking, because she's on the phone with us right now. Shalom, Carlene Montes-Deoca. How are you?
I'm excellent. Shalom to you, Rabbi.
Thank you. Thank you. Shalom. Shalom. So, first of all, does your name actually translate to Carlene Mountains of Geese?
Oh my gosh. Yes, it does. But an oca is a specific type of bird that's found in north central Spain. And it looks a little bit like, it looks a little bit like a goose. So it's Carlene, actually Carlene Goose Hill.
Oh, Carlene Goose Hill. That's so nice. Now, where were you born?
I was born in California, in the Santa Barbara area, but I did spend a year when I was in school. I spent it in Spain, so I went researching the name, and I found Montes de Oca up in the Basque Country, and it was this little tiny town, a little bit like, I would say a little like Deliverance, maybe.
Oh, God.
You ever saw that movie?
Yeah.
Still, that's where I came from.
So you squeal like an oca instead of a pig, I guess, is the kind of a thing that you would do up there. Just a little joke there. But nobody's laughing. All right, so...
I'm laughing.
So I assume now, religious-wise, since I am a rabbi, you must be Catholic?
At one time, I definitely was. Probably not by choice, but, you know, I had a good time, and now I'm not. Now I'm sort of, I'm open to all sorts of belief systems, anything that makes sense.
What currently makes sense? Because I'm always trying to find what makes sense for me. So what belief system is making sense for you, especially since you're a nutrition and holistic kind of wellness person?
Mm-hmm. I would say that there's no particular one. I like the best out of all of them. So I spent time actually in Israel, and I spent time in...
Oh, stop right there. Oh, what did you do in Israel?
Yes.
Me about Israel.
I used to travel. One of the things, I'm kind of an adventurer, and I always used to love to travel by myself wherever I could. And so the way I would do that, I would just spin the globe when we actually had globes, and I just put my finger down. It's like, where did I end up? And so one year I ended up... in Israel and Egypt. I decided to travel out there for a couple of months, and I had a great adventure. I ended up in a kibbutz, you know, and spent some time there. I ended up all sorts of places, like Safat, you know, all these amazing places. Had a great time.
Well, what was either the scariest thing or the best thing that happened to you in Israel or Egypt?
Oh, well, I'll tell you this in Egypt. This was the most amazing thing that ever happened to me, and there's like a film reference to that, which is I showed up to the pyramids, and I was like, whoa, I'm here at the pyramids. And all of a sudden, this guy came out on this beautiful black Arabian horse, and he says to me, I can take you to some other pyramids. You know, if you hire me for the day, I'll take you to some other pyramids.
I'm sure he could.
They're out in the desert. Yeah, well, believe me. And I was like, how much? He's like, $20. I'm like, I'm going with you. So he brought out a horse, and it's hysterical because he says to me, can you ride? I'm like, yeah, sure, because I had ridden on my uncle's farm, you know, like 20 years ago. So I'm like, yeah, I can ride.
Oh, boy.
So I get on the horse. He gets on his horse. His horse takes off through the desert, and so does mine. I'm holding on for dear life, and then at some point I'm sort of like getting used to the rhythm of this horse who is speeding through the desert. I am living my Lawrence of Arabia dream, just flying through the desert. So in the middle of all this, the horses stop and all of this, and all of a sudden I see a camel caravan going through the desert. It was amazing. And I hear somebody shout out my name. And I'm like, what? And it was somebody who I'd met in Israel like a month before, and the camel caravan drove by. So it's like, you never know when you're going to run into someone, you know.
It's like seeing somebody at a Starbucks on Fifth Avenue. Totally amazing. That's wonderful.
Kinda. So,
before we get to your film editing stuff, what's another amazing place that you visited in your globe-spinning travels and something that happened there?
Amazing. Well, I will tell you that when you travel by yourself, and maybe when I was traveling, it was a little bit of a different world, but I found that it forced me to talk to other people. You know, I had to talk to other people. Otherwise, I wasn't going to talk to anybody. If I brought a friend along, I would just talk to them. So when I remember I ended up in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Time when things were not good, you know, and I ended up in the middle of the town. I thought I could get to Dublin. They're like, no, there's no trains. You got to stick around here. And everybody was walking around with machine guns. The city center was totally closed. There were tanks everywhere. They took all my stuff. They looked through it. I'm like, hey, where can I stay? They're like, you're in Belfast, Northern Ireland. There's nowhere to stay. And I'm like, So I started kind of walking around town, kind of trying to see where I could stay. And it was so funny because I literally ran into some people and I said, is there somewhere to stay around here? Is there like a little hotel? Is there something? And they said, stay with us. And it was this beautiful couple who I met, and they took me in for the night, and they took me the next day to the train and checked to make sure there, because they check, you know, you get on the train, you check to make sure there's no bombs.
Good Lord.
So they still took me in, and I never forgot that, just how generous they were.
Do you still get to travel that way, or are those years kind of starting to move behind you?
You know what? There was a point that I remember South America, and I just wasn't having the same kind of connection, and I realized it's time to start traveling with somebody else, or it's time to be in a relationship, or I felt the need to, you know, to do this not alone. And this last year, my husband and I, we've been married 14 years, and we finally took our honeymoon.
Mazel.
Portugal. Yeah, thank you. And we went to Portugal, and we had a great time together.
Well, Mazel, by the way. What does your husband do?
Thank you. He is an award-winning sound editor at Lucasfilm.
Now, wait a minute, you've known him for 14 years, or you've been married for 14 years. How long ago did you start doing film work?
I started it right out of school, so let me see. I'm really bad at math. I can't figure that one out. No, it was like about 30-some years ago, and it was right out of school. I was that was my major was film. So right off the bat, I was doing it.
Well, where did you study? Were you at USC or where?
No, I decided I was going to go to USC. Then I decided I got a full scholarship, actually, to Loyola Marymount.
Whoa.
So I was like, well, I'll take that. And they had a great film department. I'm still friends with a lot of people who are still, you know, teachers there. And it was an amazing program. I learned so much. It was great.
And not only did you get to do it in school, but you came out and you started getting jobs. Like, what was your first real job in the industry after you got out of Marymount?
You know what? I got really lucky. I don't know if you know who Haskell Wexler is.
Oh, the cinematographer from Medium Cool.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I lucked out. I don't know, the gods were with me that day because they never took interns ever. I walked in, I'm like, will you take me as an intern? They're like, sure. And they had just changed, you know, whoever was in charge of that. So I was in sort of their company as an intern at my last semester in school, and that turned into a job because Haskell directed a movie called Latino, which was about the situation in Nicaragua at the time. And that movie, I ended up started off as an apprentice editor, and that movie they went to Lucasfilm with, which is how I ended up getting connected to Skywalker, you know, and George Lucas and that whole operation as an assistant editor. And so it was just a great opportunity for me.
Let me ask you, in the first couple of weeks, and I'll bet you remember very well, that you were working for Haskell Wexler on Latino. What did you do physically? What was a day like when you were working or interning as an assistant editor?
Well, I will tell you, that experience, I was spoiled because I thought, I mean, we only worked on that movie 9 to 5. Okay, and I thought, oh, that's the way the whole business is. That's the way you do it. It wasn't until my next movie that I was like, oh, my God, I'm exhausted, because it wasn't. It was like 8 to 10 or something like that. So for me, when I was working on that job, it was bliss. It was, we were working out of the main editor's house in Venice, California. He had turned his garage into an editing suite, and it was awesome. We had the greatest time. We'd go to lunch in Venice. We'd come back. You know, for me, it was just kind of like, you know, you'd be handling film and putting trims together and filing things and learning, you know, because I hadn't done it really on a movie before, and learning, and you'd be cutting and you'd get a chance to do something. And so we'd be out in the sun, you know, taking breaks. It was fantastic.
My God, it sounds like the best job in the world. Who was the actual editor on that?
That was Michael. Well, there's a couple of editors, but the original editor was Michael Ornstein, and then, then Bob Dalva, Robert Dalva cut it, and then I think Sam Osteen took a stab at it as well. He's a New York editor, right?
So let me ask you, when you're in the garage, with all these clippings and this footage, how often would Haskell Wexler be there working with you guys, or would he just talk to your boss and then go away, and you would just essentially be working with other people?
Oh, man. Well, that's the thing. Haskell was amazing. First, he was in Nicaragua, a good part of it.
Well, yeah.
And when he got back, then he was there all the time. You know, he'd come in. You know, he was great. In fact, I remember when I was still, at his, before I got onto that movie, I was working for his commercial production company, and he knew I was in school, and he was so generous. He said to me, I'll give you the film to make your student film.
Wow.
He was so generous. He was just very kind and just always that way, and an interesting guy, you know, just an interesting human being, you know, because he was just very concerned about the planet and about, you know, about all the things that were going on politically, and just an interesting guy to talk to.
Now, do you remember, be it on that experience or the next one, the first time your suggestion was accepted in terms of an edit or a cut?
Oh, man, thank you so much for asking that, because this reminded me of a movie I worked on, which you didn't mention, which I think you will laugh at, but it was called Howard the Duck.
Oh, boy. Howard the Duck. We do remember this one, because basically Leah Thompson was seducing a duck in it. I don't know why, don't know how, but there it was. And was it a Lucasfilm?
Yes, he backed that movie, and it was, I forget the producer.
Was it Zemeckis who was the guy on it?
No, it was somebody else. He was, you know, he had some people he went to film school with at USC, and it was Gloria Katz and her husband, which now his name is escaping me. But anyway, I remember, funny enough, I wasn't there when it happened, but somebody, Willard, I forgot his name. But anyway, he must have asked a question, or he must have said something, and I really didn't realize there was any protocol, so I just blabbered out my opinion about something, and that was that. And then later on, I ran into somebody else who was working on the show, and he said, oh, my God, you know what just happened? And I'm like, what? He said, we were all sitting there with George, and George was saying this is what he thought of it. And Willard says, yeah, but do you know Carlene, the assistant editor? She said this. And I'm like, wow, really cool. So I don't remember what the suggestion was, but obviously made some kind of impression.
Now let me ask you, when you are working on a movie like Howard the Duck, did you guys realize it would not be the next Jaws or Close Encounters? Or not until release date, reviews come out, audiences don't come, critics laugh? When did you know?
I had a sense when I read the script.
Oh, wow.
But I mean, for me, that was just my sense of it, and I thought, well, but the thing is, I was so new, you know, I was a young, you know, I was just beginning, and I thought to myself, well, they must know. I remember thinking that, because my mother read it too, and she's like, I don't get it, and I said, well, they must know, because they're, you know, they've been doing it forever, so they must know. But I remember reading the script and thinking it was just like I thought Leonard Part 6, they were both kind of odd.
Well, that was Leonard Part 6. Since you mentioned it, and I mentioned it before, that is one of the lesser-known films of a particular comedian slash actor named William Cosby. Did you meet him?
Yes, I did. I definitely did.
And you woke up in your own bed?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
So no horror stories, nothing.
No, in fact, you know, obviously we know what went down with that, and I started thinking back to those days, and I thought he was very funny. He was flirtatious, but in a way that wasn't, to me, anything that was offensive. You know, it was just funny, kind of the way, you know, it's Bill Cosby, right? So, I have nothing to report on that.
Do you have any different stories to report, or any funny stories or anecdotes about him that have nothing to do with the bad stuff, just that, you know, you collaborated with him on some level on this movie?
No, not really. Not with him. He wasn't around that much, honestly. You know, I ran into him a few times, but there was no... I don't remember ever seeing him in the editing room.
Huh. Okay. Well, I don't think he wasn't directing that. He was just as an actor, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you had a movie like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which you also did assisting sound effects on, did you have a sense then, having read the script, having worked on the movie, while you were working on it, that, ooh, this might really take off?
Not at all.
Oh, go figure.
Not at all. No sense of that one. I just, no. And as you say, I was an assistant sound effects editor, so I was kind of a little bit more removed from the whole... everything that was going on. I was friends with the director, and it was sort of like how I got on to that show, but I wasn't really in the midst of it.
Now, since you've been doing sound effects and helping with sound effects, what are some cool stories, be it for that film or another one, of how unexpected ways sound effects are made? Like we see something happening on the screen, and, oh, guess what? They're actually doing this in a little room with a hammer and a chainsaw or something.
Well, I think that's more Foley. Actually, what you reminded me of, I'd love to share a story about Dustin Hoffman.
And oh, please. Nice Jewish boy,
so,
yes.
I was working on a movie called Jimmy Hollywood, and it was Barry Levinson was the director. And anyway, he told us at some point, he said, oh, my friends are going to come in and look at the film and maybe give you some ideas about editing, you know, because we can do different versions now that we're on digital. So we're like, oh, well, who's going to be his friend? Who's going to pop in? And who pops in? Dustin Hoffman. And we're both like, oh, you know, it was myself and the main editor. And we thought, wow, it's Dustin Hoffman. And the thing was, again, I was younger and I was thinking, okay, I need to be totally professional. It's Dustin Hoffman, but I can't act like, you know, I'm kind of flustered at the fact that he's standing right there. And the room we were working in was really small, like super small. Like our chairs were like right backed up against each other. And I was cutting some sound effects on a Chem, which is an editing machine. And the other editor, actually, the main editor was working on a much larger digital, I don't remember what it was, what we were cutting on at the time, but he was working on his system, and Dustin was mostly working with him. But every now and again, he'd roll his chair back, and I'd have my headphones on, and he'd just, like, look at me and be sitting next to me, and he'd give me this look, and he goes, what are you doing? I'm cutting these sound effects or whatever, and he's like, mm-hmm. And then he'd roll back, and then I'd be like, you know, I'd get a little flustered. My cheeks started getting red because he started doing this every, like, minute or so, and he goes, now what are you doing? What is that? What is that? Why are you cutting that? And I'd be like, so I was getting more and more flustered every time we did it, and on one of the times, I got so flustered that I reached over for something in the machine, which has teeth, grabbed the sweater that I had on, and it rolled it up in the thing, and the machine just stopped dead. And I'm sitting there caught in this machine. I can't get out. And he keeps doing, like, back and forth, and I'm too embarrassed to say, I'm caught in this machine. I can't get out of this thing. And finally, when they did catch on, everybody started just really laughing and thinking it was the funniest thing that had ever happened. And I don't even know what he was saying to me, but he just thought it was so funny. And then they all walked out, and then the editors reached over and just turned the knob. I mean, my sweater came out. I'm like, God, I'm so embarrassed. So that was my little Dustin Hoffman story with sound effects.
Oh, I'm so glad you remembered that. That's wonderful. I love that story. We are talking, by the way, with Carling Montes de Oca about her years editing or assistant editing and doing sound effects on Hollywood movies. We'll get back to a bit more of that. But you did, how long ago did you go for a complete sort of career change and move into nutrition and wellness and dogs and cats and animals and geese and beavers and whatever else?
Well, that was, I would say, I think that it were going on about, I've been in private practice now for 14 years, so I would say probably about 16 years ago, I made a transition because I started working in TV with my transition out. And so it's been about 14, 16 years or so.
Well, then let me ask you, I mean, you built up a resume. You have films that were flops, also films that were very big hits, and a constant stream of work, moving higher and higher, working with amazing major directors, major editors. Then you get into television. Why suddenly give that up, especially if you're still in Hollywood?
Why give up the whole thing?
Yeah.
Because at first, it was really awesome, and I thought it was great, but honestly, the hours are 24/7. There's a work ethic involved that means you are there to work, and if you don't bother making plans, don't bother making dinner plans, don't bother making weekend plans, you've got to be there, and that's the unspoken rule. You need to be there 24/7, and honestly, it's like my health wasn't the best working those hours. There was one show, one of the movies I did really got me because the main editor, the director, wanted to work from noon to like 3 in the morning every night. And so that was really tough. And I felt really awful after it. And I could see my health was just not going to be my best. And there was a time when we moved from film, actual film, to digital. And that's when I made the transition. I'm like, I can't do it anymore. I can't put myself through that anymore.
And that's funny to me because it would almost seem as if that would have shortened your hours, and that would have been so much easier because you're not physically gluing and cementing or doing whatever physical celluloid stuff and audio tape you had to do. Now everything is just like click, click, mouse, mouse, ding, ding.
Right.
But no?
Well, that was the promise, and it didn't quite come down that way. I remember these were all the things we were told. Your hours will be shorter, it won't be as hard, but honestly, my husband stayed in it, and, he's been up until this last year. I mean, he's done it for 30-some-odd years, and he has quite a resume himself, but he said, it was never the same. I mean, they actually, because we could do more, they made us work hard.
Oh.
Less of a crew, and the camaraderie we always had in the film, with film editing was, you'd always see people, you'd always be talking to them, you'd take breaks, and it was nice, and now you're sort of locked in kind of these rooms all to yourself.
And you're just sitting at a monitor all day, like everybody else in the whole world. And by the way, when you mention your husband's resume, among the films that he has been a sound editor on, include Castaway and Avatar. So, no big slouch there, by the way.
Oh, no, and he's a really respected, people study his work, so he's really good at it.
Well, did he give you any secrets of the trade of how to do better sound editing?
No, because one is that wasn't really my specialty, and two, I knew him back in the day when I was editing. That's where we first met, but, we had totally different lives. We reconnected 20 years later.
Whoa. Okay, I mean, how did you meet up? What happened?
Well, initially we met in the film world. We worked on, he worked on the very first movie I ever did, and I knew him, but then my life went to L.A., and I actually got married, and I got divorced, and he was also married. Unfortunately, his wife passed away, and then suddenly, an old boyfriend of mine brought us together, and suddenly we really clicked. It was incredible after 20 years, and we actually fell in love online because we hadn't seen each other. Then we decided, okay, let's see each other, let's see if this works, and it was love at first sight. I never believed that could happen, but it did.
You know what that was? That was a jump cut. You were spliced together after all those years. Held apart, you were in separate sections of your lives, and then suddenly, oh, they brought two strands of these celluloid together, and boom, it was meant to be. Mazel tov. That's wonderful.
And that splice has really helped.
Well, let me ask you in terms of helping, because I did jump away from it, and I promised a little to talk about it, about now your career of nutrition and wellness and helping people. What do you tell people? Like, see, to me, if I was going to give somebody nutritional advice, I would say, okay, eat better, eat a balanced meal, and have some fiber. What else do you have to tell a person?
Well, I would say, if you're stressed out, let's figure what's going on there. If you're around toxic people, let's see what we can do to remedy that, because happiness has a huge part to do with your health and your well-being. I would say incorporate, if you like dogs, if you like animals, there's ways to actually be healthy by having them in your life. You know, they get you out on walks, you know. And so I think what you're suggesting is very good advice. And honestly, I think the basics are what everybody skips over, but you actually have to do them. You have to actually go to sleep. You know, there's a reason we're supposed to be, the sun goes down at a certain time of the day. It's supposed to be that we're winding down. So I'd say nutrition is great. Sleep is important. Exercise, and you don't have to go out to the gym necessarily, but you at least have to get walking.
I think that's fair. Also, you mentioned, I don't know, you talked about a dog, you talked about a cat. You should write a book with something in the title, shouldn't you? Hint, hint.
I think so. That might be I wonder if that could be a bestseller.
Wait, let me think of the title. Hold it. I'll give you the title.
All right.
Dog as my doctor, cat as my nurse. How's that for a title?
I don't know if that'll work.
Ah, shit. Okay, well, what's your idea?
No, I love it. I love it, Rabbi. I think you're onto something.
That is because we're joking here. Carlin Montes de Oca has written a book called Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse. It's been published by She Writes Press, and it's been on Amazon for a while already. And what? It's been number one and stuff?
Actually, it's only been out for about 3 weeks, and it got to number one in a couple of categories. In fact, it was number one again today, but it was number one on pre-order, so that's really good.
Mazel McClick. So is that really just about using your pets to help you get better?
It's about, people actually just think of animals like dogs and cats, let's say, you know, though it could be any companion animal, like a pot-bellied pig, a horse, whatever, but they think of them as pets, and then you don't think about it as anything else. But it's really about all of the ways, unexpected ways, that we don't realize that our animals can contribute to our health and our well-being. And a lot of that, you know, right now there's study after study coming out that shows, you know, they help decrease blood pressure. You know, they help us relieve anxiety. They help us with depression. Lots of things that people are not aware of.
Huh. Okay. Now, what animals do you have?
Well, in the book I write about my six. I call it the six-pack. It was four dogs and two cats.
Gewalt! Wow!
Yes.
No wonder you didn't have time to edit film anymore. You're too busy running around cleaning poop. My God.
Well, yeah, that or I get the kids to do it, but anyway.
Oh, I know you had kids. Mazel tov. So.
Oh, thank you.
So can you give us a for instance of when your animals helped you get over a difficult situation?
Oh, absolutely. I think I mentioned that I went through a divorce.
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, nobody died, but it felt like it. That was really a major heartache, and I wasn't doing so well. You know, I wasn't sleeping. I had anxiety, and I'm going to tell you right now, Rabbi, I had an affair.
Okay. Not with one of the animals.
With Ben and Jerry.
Oh! You jumped on my joke there, okay.
I had an affair with those guys. I was into that every night, and, you know, I got 15 extra pounds, you know, and my self-esteem was really low. So all these things that I wasn't doing so hot with. But then I had these two amazing cats, and these guys, like, they would help me sleep. You know, they'd just come up next to you, and they'd just lay on your chest, and you'd feel the purring, and suddenly I wasn't as anxious, and I'd start to sleep more. And the thing is, you know, you have to take care of your animals. You do. You can't just leave them alone. So I would take care of them, and that would get me out of my own mindset about how unhappy I was. So they helped me a lot in many ways until my husband showed up. My Ken, who's my husband now, showed up. And I always say, you know, they really checked him out before they let him in.
that's what animals do, too. They're protecting you. They want to make sure. They don't want to see you hurt again, you know. But let me ask you also, speaking of getting hurt, I'm like the producer of this radio program, Dave, who is rather needle-phobic. I do not like sharp, pointy things. I don't even like holding a yad when I'm reading the Torah. So needles and injections and pins and acupuncture things scare me. And I wonder, do they really work?
Well, I've seen some pretty amazing things, and even today, you know, this medicine never ceases to amaze me, and in fact, I see people on a regular basis, and the other day, for example, I had a new patient, and he had one of these weird things that nobody knows what's going on with him. You know, suddenly he's sweating all the time, and he's got these high fevers, and the doctors are like, we don't know what's wrong with you, this, and the other, and so I'm listening to the whole thing. You know, I do an intake, I listen to it, and I do a treatment, and I followed up, but I hadn't heard back from him. And then I ran into him recently, and I said, hey, I didn't hear back from you. He goes, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get your email. I go, well, how are you feeling? He goes, I'm feeling terrific. He goes, ever since I saw you, you know, all that stuff went away, and now I'm feeling stronger, and I'm feeling better. So I can't explain how it completely works. We have our ideas about how acupuncture works, but I've seen it do some pretty amazing things.
Well, do you do also the bankus cups, you know, with the hot cups on the back, and it pulls up the blood and makes you purple, all that?
All of that. I do all of that. Yes, I do that. I do, you know, I have a wellness practice where I incorporate things. I incorporate essential oils, which are helpful for people who are needle phobic. You know, oils are really good, and you apply them to acupuncture points where you would have put the needles, but it's a much gentler thing. And honestly, I have a lot of people, actually, interestingly enough, mostly men, who are a little needle phobic, and we start with something so gentle and so minor that, you know, in a short amount of time, they're able to actually use needles, and they forget that they even were to begin with, that they had an issue with it.
I wish I could be like that, let me tell you. But let me ask you something else, Carlin Montes de Oca. You are a vegetarian, right? So I can tell how that came about. You stopped eating meat. Why did you become a vegetarian?
I'm actually a vegan.
Oh, vegan. Oh, excuse me, a vegan. Oh.
Yes, we must be very clear. No, I was very, very early on when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a vegetarian, but my parents wouldn't allow it. You know, they were just not into that. But I got it right away. It's like, okay, I like animals. I actually love animals. Why am I eating them? So I got that as a kid, but then my parents were like, no, you got to eat meat or whatever. But the moment I left the house at 18 and I went off to Loyola, I started the vegetarian journey. I mean, I would go in and out of that. But, you know, since I've been 18, I've been really on that. And then I'm going to share this with you. I guess it's been about 6 years ago or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that there was a contest through People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which is PETA.
That's the question I was going to ask. I was wondering how you won that award. Tell everybody.
Yes. So they had PETA Sexiest Vegetarian Over 50. And I saw that, and it wouldn't be something I would normally do, but something really called to me about that. And I went, you know what? I'm going to run for that contest. And you know what? The moment I do this, I said this to myself, I'm going to become a vegan. It's time. It's time. I understand why I need to do this. I understand where, you know, even as a vegetarian, where cheese is coming from, the issues with other animal, you know, products. I'm going to do it. And I ran for it, and I won. So ever since then, I've been a vegan.
And you have been voted the sexiest vegetarian over 50 by PETA. Which is quite amazing. So no eggs, no more Ben and Jerry's, I assume.
Right? Yeah, that was long gone. Now, I was done with that affair. That was just a brief thing.
Well, no, but also no ice cream ever, right? Or not milky ice cream.
Well, no milk ice cream, but there is, you know, it's a different world now.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell some of the plant-based, like the coconut ice creams. You can't tell the difference. They're so good. So it's not like I'm missing anything. And now there are all these plant-based cheeses, and those are delicious. So people's creativity, you know, allows it to be so much easier now for vegetarians and vegans. So and it opens you up to eating so many more healthy foods, which is great.
I agree 98%, but let me ask you something. When you are sick, when you've got a cold like my friend Dave has had for the past week, is there anything truly that replaces a hot bowl of chicken soup?
Yes, everything. Actually, what I would suggest to your friend Dave is in advance is, because we know that the common cold, you can't really cure it, but you can do your best to prevent it. So there are so many things that you can use preventatively, herbs, supplements, even essential. There are certain essential oils I use. I haven't had a cold in like 2.5 years.
Knock wood.
But
which is a goyish thing, but still, yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I understand what that is. But still, I think prevention is everything. So the things that you mentioned that keep you healthy, these are the things that prevent the colds and the, you know, and the flu.
No, but once you have a cold, let's say you can't prevent it, you get it, there's something about a bowl of the properties of chicken soup with noodles and the fat in there. Does lentil do the same thing?
Well, what I would suggest instead is I would make a little cocktail of, and I would add to that little cocktail, I would make it out of ginger tea, and I would add some lemon, and I would add just a touch, like, and I'm not kidding, a touch, like an eighth of a teaspoon or something of cayenne pepper.
Oh, boy.
And it's really, it's not spicy. It's interesting. If you just drink it in that way, it's not spicy.
Hmm.
But it really helps you to sweat out the disease, you know, so you want to, or the cold. So that's a good thing that I do. And there's other supplements and things that are really good out there. I just don't want to necessarily promote them on the air.
Oh, fair enough. What I do want to promote, besides Carly Montes de Oca's book, Dog as My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse, from She Writes Press, is your website, animalhumanhealth.com, animalhumanhealth.com. But also going back, talking a little bit more about your years doing films and things like that, because, you know, we're all fascinated with Hollywood and those kinds of people. For example, you worked on Gardens of Stone, a movie with Oliver Stone. Well, he's kind of an unusual character. Do you have any stories about him?
Actually, not really. On that one, I worked on it so briefly that I really don't, but I could give you a Mel Gibson story.
Okay, go.
All right. I was working on a movie called Three Men and a Little Lady.
Oh, yeah.
That movie, do you remember that? With Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, and Jensen.
Yes.
Right? And the director of that was the lovely Emil Ardolino, who's now passed away, but he was just wonderful. Anyway, we were in England. We were in England on that movie, which was loads of fun, right? Get to go to England and get to be out in the countryside. And one day, actually, we were at Pinewood Studios, which is in London. And I remember the main editor on the show saying to me, "You don't seem very, like, taken by all these actors we're around all the time." And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And he's like, "Well, if you could meet somebody, who would it be?" And I was just thinking, well, who would I want to meet? I went just off the top of my head and went, Mel Gibson, just because I couldn't think of anybody else, right?
Yeah.
So then, okay, so, you know, a couple months passed, whatever, we're working. And I'm in my editing room, and I'm doing something, and all of a sudden I hear a little knock on the door, and I look over, and there's Mel Gibson standing there in his outfit from Hamlet. Oh, he's got the little, you know, the little dress, you know, with stockings and everything. And he's beautiful. He's got long hair. He looks like Braveheart. And he's like, "Oh, I think I'm supposed to be working here with you, you know, on Hamlet." And I went, "Oh, no, you know, this is actually a different editing room, but I can take you to those editing rooms." And we had this nice little walk all the way down to where the other editing rooms were, and he's very charming and very nice, and he thanked me and all of that. And as soon as he was gone, I ran down the hallway. I ran into, like, my editing room, which was divided by a swinging door between myself and the other editor, and I'm going through the swinging door, as he's coming on the way out, and we all bonk each other on the head, and I'm like, "Hey, guess what? Mel Gibson was just in my editing room." And he says, "I know. I told him that was the Hamlet editing room. You could meet him." So it was kind of a setup.
That was nice. And that was a nice, I mean, considering all the Mel Gibson stories we've heard, that's a nice story all around for everybody involved. I like that.
It was.
That's very, very cool. And let me ask you, you mentioned also that after you moved away from film, before you moved into your current career, you did stuff in TV, and the IMDb mentions that you were an assistant, not necessarily on film or sound or anything, just assistant on a show called VIP with Pamela Anderson.
Yes.
Tell me some stories.
I'll tell you one, because I actually really like Pam a whole lot. And basically why I was on that show was I was actually done with working on anything because I was in school. I was studying at school, you know, to get my master's in Chinese medicine. And the director was came and asked me if I would work with him on that, and I said, no, I can't. I'm in school. And he's like, no, it would really help me if you could. So I said, you know, I can't be an editor. It's too many hours. He says, well, come be my executive assistant, and I'll let you, you know, go to school at night or do whatever. Just help me. So basically, that's why I took that job. But anyway, I liked Pam a whole lot. She was really cool. She's really into animals, which I love. And one day, we were both really sick together. We both had the stomach. We went to eat and something, craft services. But we were both just deadly sick. And I just remember she was so nice. She was just basically walking around, like hardly walking. And she had, like, these saltine crackers in the, you know, the whatever that wrap is that you hold saltine.
Yeah.
And she just looks at me and she kind of hands me the thing. And I take a saltine. I sort of put it in my mouth. She puts one in her mouth. And so we kind of sat there just sharing saltines together as we were both deadly sick.
Now, see, you should have given her a little lemon and cayenne pepper, and there you go. You would have been fine the next day.
Well, it wasn't on my, you know, I didn't learn that for another year.
So. Fair enough. So. Now, before I let you go, any other stories about directors or editors that you, did you ever witness a big fight between an editor and a director over a scene that they were cutting?
I did. Okay, I'll tell you this one.
Oh, boy.
I was going to show you another one, but it was pretty funny. Okay, so I was working on a movie called Alive.
About the people eating each other, yeah?
Yeah. Frank Marshall directed that. Okay. So, you know, we're in the final mix, which basically means we're done with all the editing. We're sitting in this, like, theater, a dark theater, and they're just going through putting the sound effects in, overlaying that and putting in the music and blending it all in the dialogue and blending everything together to finish it all up, right? So we're at the last stages here. And I remember that the mixers decided to do a joke.
Uh-oh.
Where, like, they put in a sound effect that was like, what is that, Porky Pig or da 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 whatever, da 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 da, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
In the middle of the thing. And they're like, oh, wouldn't that be funny? We're all going to sit here, and Frank's going to come in, and he's going to hear it, and he's going to think it's so funny, this, that, and the other, right?
Uh-oh.
So, anyway, so we sat there, and we all know it's coming up, and all of a sudden it comes up, da 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 da. And all of a sudden Frank Marshall stands up, and he goes, you know what? You know, I'm not paying you guys to do this kind of stuff. This isn't funny. We've got a deadline, you know, and he's just reaming them. And they're like, and they're going, oh, my God. And he's just like, you guys, I don't have time to waste. I don't want this. You better get it out. You better, you know, do this right, whatever. He leaves. Dead quiet. Dead quiet. And we're all sitting there, and those guys are like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And all of a sudden, 3 seconds later, Frank Marshall comes back in and goes, oh, I got all of you, got all of you.
Oh.
It was awesome because they thought they were fired. They thought that was it. It was so hysterical.
Hollywood people are just fucked up. I'm sorry. They just are. God bless them. But, oh, boy. So tell me one more nice story. Totally nice story.
Oh, and a nice story. Nice story. Darn, I had a good one, but it wasn't.
Oh, no, then another good one. It doesn't have to be so nice.
All right. Well, this is just funny.
Yeah.
I worked on a movie called Christmas Vacation.
National Lampoon, right?
That's the one. Chevy Chase, right?
Right.
So we were on that movie, and I remember Chevy Chase would come in periodically, and he comes in one day where all the editors are gathered. He goes, you guys, I'm going to take you to a great lunch. And he goes, so how about on Thursday? He goes, Thursday, you guys, and we're all like, yeah. He goes, oh, it's going to be so great. You're going to love it. So we're all looking forward to this because we're thinking, Chevy Chase is taking us to lunch. It's going to be a great lunch. We can't wait.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, we're all waiting. You know, we get kind of a little bit more dressed up. Anyway, he packs us into his BMW. We, you know, go down, you know, through Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. And we pull in to Flaming Patties, which is a hamburger hole-in-the-wall joint.
Oh, well. Okay.
What was really hysterical about that was, like, I'm sitting there, like, all I could order was, like, lettuce and a bun, you know? Okay, I'm vegetarian, and thanks, Debbie, that was really great.
Well, let me ask, was he... Here's the deal. Was he being either a douche, or does he really love that place? And even though it's a hole in the wall, he loves the food, so he wanted to share it.
Yeah, he loved that place, and he really thought it was the very best thing ever. And so, but it was just kind of funny because we all had this other expectation of what a great place.
Yeah. Oh, well. Oh, well. And the next time you can take him to Wendy's, you know.
Yeah, next time. I think they have a salad bar.
There you go. Well, we have had a delightful verbal meal with Carlin Montes de Oca. She is the author of Dog is My Doctor, Cat as My Nurse, from She Writes Press, available on Amazon. And also, I assume you can get it from your website, animalhumanhealth.com?
Yes, and also from your favorite booksellers.
Or even your least favorite booksellers. They should still have it, too. I want to wish our guest, the sexiest vegetarian over 50, to have much more years of health and sex and veganism. And let me ask you, what's the best movie you've seen recently?
The best movie I've seen recently? Darn! Why is nothing coming to mind? I'm a bit of a Marvel geek. I really like Marvel movies.
Okay.
So, you know, what did I see recently? I did like Doctor Strange.
Okay.
Hello?
I thought you would elaborate on that, but I guess it was...
No, I did like it. I'm trying to think. Nothing I should have thought of that question, but...
And you are able to watch a movie just as a complete fan. You don't sit there going, oh, I would have cut this a little differently, or this is too long, or this is jumpy. You can just sit down in a movie theater in front of the DVD and watch like a person?
No.
Oh.
No, we can't. My husband and I go to something, and that's why, like, sometimes our friends, they'll be like, oh, wasn't that great? We're like, no, that was terrible. Look at the editing. Look at the, you know, it was way too loud here. And so my husband and I are great together. We go and we can talk about that stuff, but it's not like we rip it apart on purpose, but we like to see well-done films.
Well, we have done some well-done radio here, I think. And it's all thanks to you, Carlin Montes de Oca. It just remains for me to thank you once again for being with us in the neighborhood, to wish you continued health and success and happiness, and shalom to you.
Shalom, Rabbi. Thank you so much.